Home is more important today than it's ever been. So if you're looking for the right place or trying to take advantage of those low interest rates with a refi, you should know that there's a nationally recognized mortgage originator right here in the Triad. Ashley McKenzie Sharp with Fairway Independent Mortgage Corporation has been included in the top 200 loan originators in the country for 8 consecutive years. Providing personal service with experience, speed, and satisfaction is her number one priority. Trust Ashley to provide you with everything you need for a simple, rewarding home loan experience. And as a sponsor of the Triad Podcast Network, if you text or call Ashley at 336-575-9448 for your mortgage quote today, just mention the podcast, and upon receiving your quote, we'll send you a $25 local business gift card. 336-575-9448 to reach Ashley McKenzie Sharp with Fairway Independent Mortgage Corporation. Ashley McKenzie Sharp, NMLS ID number 100776, is a licensed mortgage originator in North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Florida. Fairway Independent Mortgage Corporation, NMLS ID number 2289, is an equal housing lender.
This is the Triad Podcast Network.
Okay, it's early August, and that means we are close to going back to school. Hard to believe, Jennifer, that it is already back to school time. We were talking, and as of this recording, your kids were going back in less than 2 weeks. My kids are going back in less than 3 weeks. We're here, and we've been spending the last episode, we were just talking about summer vacations.
And now here
we are talking back to school. It happens just that quickly.
I know, a blink of an eye, our vacations are over, aren't they?
yeah, they are. If you are still planning another vacation before school starts, go check out our vacations, our summer episodes. You can find them all in our archives and on the Blue Rock Wealth Management website. And as we mentioned before, Jennifer Johnson is a certified financial planner with Blue Rock Wealth Management, and she's here to talk to us about some tips for back to school so you don't break the budget on getting ready to get back into the classroom. Jennifer, you were researching some numbers prior to this episode. Let's start with, what are the typical expenses that people take on when it comes to purchasing all the things that you need to get back to the new school year?
Yeah, it really adds up. I mean, I'm sure if our listeners have kids like we do, they won't be surprised, but it's, you know, back to school clothing. Kids want new clothes, of course, and it's supplies for the school year, pencils and notebooks and erasers and all those things that are on the list there of things that the teacher wants them to have. And I think for older kids, it could also be more electronics or technology too. You know, it might be a computer or something like that that they might need for their classes. But it's quite a list sometimes, and I think people, you know, often don't think about that cost, you know, as they're planning their expenses, and might be surprised at how it adds up.
Yeah, it's the technology too, because look, you know, when you and I were in school, we were worried about trapper keepers and pens and calculators. Yeah. And I remember, you know, the biggest expense that I started having when I got to high school was you had to have that special like graphing calculator for the certain math classes that you were taking. You're like, oh my goodness, I got to spend $80, $90, $100 on a calculator. But now it's laptops and tablets and all these other things that people might need right now. And so the technology advancements have certainly increase the amount of money that people are having to spend.
Yeah, even younger kids. I know my daughter, who's about to turn 10, she didn't have to have a computer. The school, I think, provides a Chromebook for them to use, but she did have to have headphones, you know, so she could use those in class, and just, you know, things like that she'll have to use. And then sometimes, you know, they'll have to have a computer maybe at home to do their homework even. So there's, you know, you're right. The technology can really add to it. I think I also had to buy that Texas Instruments same calculator, probably, that you did.
TI-82, I think it was. I think it was a TI-82 calculator.
Right.
Yeah,
that sounds right. Yeah, and I did hear the Trapper Keeper is making a comeback, so we might have to look for that, but I don't think the kids are going to want it. It's probably more for nostalgia.
It's too clunky. I mean, think about the Trapper Keeper. I mean, they were great. You put all these folders in there and you keep everything organized in one place. And, you know, and then you could kind of, you know, pick out the design that looked right for you. I mean, the Trapper Keeper was the one-stop shop for all of your school organization, but now it's too big and bulky. And, you know, if it's larger than a cell phone, then it's probably too big for kids right now. Right.
That's true. Yeah. I don't think they would find it as cool as, you know, as we did, but they also probably didn't, I'm sure our parents didn't have to spend as much as we did or we are spending. I'll do a little trivia for you. If you had to guess, what do you think the average family spent in 2020 sending kids back to school?
I'd say $400.
It's actually higher. It's almost double that. It was right at $700.
$700?
Yeah. It seems like a lot, doesn't it?
That is a lot. That's for people that could be like an entire month's rent or even a mortgage payment, depending, you know. I mean, that's a lot of money.
It's a lot. Yeah. I mean, I remember getting my hair cut a couple years ago with a guy who cuts my hair around the corner, actually, here from work in downtown Winston. He's great. But he commented it was slow this particular time of year in August. He said, well, nobody has any money because they send their kids back to school. And I think that's the first time I thought about that, as parents, we can't even get our hair cut, right? Because we're spending all our money on our kids. So what I want to talk to people about today is part of what I'm trying to do is to bring awareness to people. You know, maybe an expense that you weren't aware is as significant as it really is, and maybe offer some advice, some tips to make that a little bit easier on the family. You know, some ways you can do the back to school shopping without destroying your August, you know, budget.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's good, because that's an eye-popping number to me. I mean, that's to think about, okay, I've got all my regular expenses, and then in the month of August, I'm also going to add $700 to my budget.
Yeah.
That's the type of expense that you're like, I mean, this is what we talk about when it comes to like emergency funds. Like, that's an emergency fund level. I'm not saying back to school is an emergency fund type of thing, but it's at that level of like what you're planning for. And certainly, you know, one of the themes that we talk about is we don't want people to have to go into take on more debt for large expenses like this. So what we're here to do is to try to find out, how do you take that 700 and maybe make it smaller or plan for it so that you aren't turning it into more debt?
That's right. Cause you don't want to be paying for last year's back to school expenses on a credit card monthly this year, right? Yeah, for the interest and things that accrue throughout the year. So I think that can be done in a way too, that would make it a lot more palatable for most families. So I'm offering a few tips for folks. You know, one would be to make or get a good list of what you'll need. So before you go shopping or before you go online and start buying things, I would suggest, make a good list. And there's generally your schools are going to put out a list out there for recommended supplies. You know, your grade that your child's in might have one. One thing that I have found, though, is I think it's always good if you know who your child's teacher is going to be to check with that teacher, because I don't know if you've had this happen, Adam, or not, but there's a kind of a generic list that's out there put out by the school. And then, you know, that particular teacher might want a particular style of notebook or you know, or loose leaf paper instead of a notebook. And then you've trying to be proactive, maybe have gone ahead and bought, you know, what was on that list to start with. And then you find, oh, my child's teacher wants something a little bit different. And so then there's another shopping trip. So I like the idea of finding out what your particular child, especially this is maybe more for the younger child that's in elementary school, but to check with that teacher and see, you know, what am I really going to need? You know, or what items are on that list that I'm actually going to need, as opposed to a more generic list.
All right. If you're enjoying this podcast, then I hope you'll take just a quick second to hear about the folks that make it all possible. And that's the Ginther Group, a Triad real estate team with a vast local knowledge. Don't believe me? Hear it for yourself by listening to their real estate show right here on the Triad Podcast Network. I'm not even in the market, and I don't know what I'd do without an ally like Blake Ginther and the Ginther Group. They've helped me find a plumber, a roofer, and even helped my family save hundreds each month when we refinanced our home. Now imagine how they can help if you are in the market. They can help you get started with an evaluation to list and market your home. So if you're thinking of buying or selling in the Triad, call the Ginther Group at 336-283-8689 or find them online at theginthergroup.com. Now back to the show. You know, one of the things that we were talking about before we hit the record button was other places that people can look for these items, right?
So, yeah.
You know, maybe you do get this exhaustive list and you think, okay, well, if I go and I buy these things all new, then, you know, I could end up spending that $700. But if these are things that people need, what are some ways that maybe they can say, okay, here are some different creative ways that I can get my hands on these items, but not necessarily have to rack up the same kind of bill?
Yeah, I think there's nothing wrong with looking for use, right? I mean, if I don't know if a calculator is a great, modern example, but if there's, you know, a particular tool or something like that, that's maybe a little bit more expensive, if it's a instrument, if your child's in band or something like that, I mean, I would consider buying used for one. And then the other thing I would do, I know we've made this mistake, is, you know, you get your list and then you go shopping and you didn't realize you had four boxes of number two pencils at home, right? So from years past that you didn't even use, you know, particularly maybe since we probably all had a stint of virtual learning for a good while there. I mean, there's probably some supplies out there, some folders, some notebooks, some paper, you know, that you might already have if you check and you don't need to repurchase. Now, if your kids are like mine, they want everything new, you know, they want to go to the store, they want to pick out like a cute color. Maybe this is just girls, I don't know. They want to pick out like a cute color on like the notebooks or stuff like that, you know, cute pencils. And there, you can do some of that, right? And we're not saying don't do any of that. But, you know, maybe it's prioritized if you realize, hey, we already have plenty of pencils. You know, let's not repurchase all that. And if it's a high dollar item, you know, let's consider, is there a used option, you know, that we could go to that'll still be new to your child, you know, but that might save on that sticker price.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, one of the ideas that I had mentioned earlier was Facebook Marketplace. Because we, you know, that can be a good opportunity to look for used items. Check with your friends, your neighbors, your family that have kids that are at different ages, especially older, that may have certain school supplies that if they're going into high school that don't apply to kids that are in middle school or elementary school.
Right.
And what about even planning ahead in terms of bulk purchasing? Because, you know, in terms of everything new, one of the things that we always buy new for our kids is shoes. Get them a new pair of shoes before the school year starts. Well,
right.
You know, you can do that all at once. If you find the right deals, you can graduate in different sizes and buy, okay, we're going to store these away and they're going to be used for when they start fourth grade or when they start fifth grade, or just buy them in different sizes going up. And, you know, they may not be new from the store, but they'll be new to them, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's a good thought. Yeah. So I know sometimes with some of the shoe stores, if you buy one, the second pair's half off or something like that. So, you know, the more you buy, the more you plan ahead. I think that's really what you're saying is like, let's think ahead a little bit. I also think there's, you know, I know shoes get kind of worn, but you know, clothing, sometimes, you know, consignment stores or just different places. Like you said, Facebook Marketplace. I mean, some people, you know, are selling things used that still have the tags on them. You know, kids have outgrown them before they really even wore those outfits. So it's, again, could be new to the child, but you know, you could save a lot of money sometimes if, mm-hmm. if you're open to some maybe used items and it still feels new to them. So I think getting creative, I think that's a great idea about, you know, looking around at some different options. Not everything has to be new from right. the store. Especially not if you, I think too, the moment, you know, if you're going back to school shopping, you walk in the store, everything's going to be shiny new. You have your kid with you. They want it all. Right. I mean, if you don't, I think going into the shopping experience with some sort of limit, a dollar limit, is also helpful. I know there's some things, you know, like, you know, we mentioned the calculator, some materials, some tools that are probably non-negotiable, but, you know, if you can go into it and say, okay, you know, our family has, you know, maybe for your family, it is $400, you know, and you set some priorities and say, well, these are things we have to purchase. Maybe these other items we can save a little bit by considering used, or, you know, or just sharing, you know, sharing these supplies across siblings or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. If I recall correctly, the fall is usually a good time for consignment sales. And so
if
you're willing to wait past the start of the school year, you'll get some of these pop-up consignment sales where you can, you can get a lot for a little, and come away with some very useful stuff. Okay. I want to move on to a slightly different topic in terms of getting back to certain things as we get into the month of August and into closer to fall. But anything else on back to school in terms of tips or things that people can be aware of if they want to try to save in ways that won't make them have to spend up to $700 on this?
Yeah, I think just we've touched on this, but I think maybe do your research ahead of time, you know, shop online, price check, look for discounts, as opposed to it's Saturday before school starts, so we're going to go do all our shopping and we don't really set a limit. We don't, you know, we don't check those different sources for coupons and things, and we just walk in the store. And that's where I'm sure, you know, families kind of get in trouble because it really adds up. So I think what we're saying is just, you know, be thoughtful about it. Maybe put some constraint on how much you're spending, you know, make sure you've got a really good list and set some priorities. And if people do that, I bet it'll be a lot easier going back to school financially, at least.
Yeah. So a lot of times, and if you're like our family, back to school and getting toward the fall also means getting back to activities, youth sports, and other things. Right. I mean, we don't do a ton during the summer. You know, we were involved in baseball season. We've done some camps and things like that, but not anything on like a regular routine. But, you know, in the fall, there's soccer, there's baseball, there's football, there's all sorts of, there's music lessons, there's the arts, there's all sorts of things that get started again in the fall. And, you know, we've already talked about dropping $700 for back to school supplies. This is the time of year when people have to start paying registration fees and purchasing supplies for out of school activities. I mean, the numbers can really start to climb on people if they're not careful about some of these things outside of the classroom.
That's right. Yeah, that's definitely on my agenda here for a back to school subject, because it's also back to some activities, right? I mean, and our kids do sports and clubs and other things, and I know yours do too. And I have conversations with clients about, you know, where they're putting their money, and it particularly usually comes up around college savings and, you know, how to direct money more toward college. And I think particularly youth sports can really be a big expense for a lot of people, particularly I think if you get into, well, I want to say get when you get into travel sports, but honestly, you don't even have to get into travel sports for it to be pretty pricey. I mean, I think with kid activities, I mean, some things can be very inexpensive. You know, if it's a club at school, it's less than $100, but I often find people, you know, kids of course want to try everything and you want to expose them to to different things. But I think parents, you know, go into these activities, particularly I think sports that require a lot of equipment, mm-hmm. not really understanding what they've said yes to. Do you agree with that? At least financially, you know, and my girls, one in particular now is very active in softball. She's a catcher. So we have, you know, we got all kinds of gear, mm-hmm. you know, at our house, and they, you know, and they grow too. So, you know, they can't wear the same catcher gear at six, at 10, you know, they, so, I mean, all the equipment, and certainly other sports, I think, are the same way. You know, baseball, I'm sure, is the same way. I've heard a similar story about ice hockey. Friend told me once about his son wanted to try ice hockey. He signed him up, bought, I don't know, hundreds of dollars, you know, worth of ice hockey equipment, only to find the child really did not like ice hockey, you know, when he got on the ice. You know, and so as we go back to school, this was on my mind because, you know, people are going to, you know, we're going to have to make decisions, not just about, you know, what they're doing during the school day, but, you know, what activities, you know, do they participate mm-hmm. in? And I guess from my role as a planner, as an advisor, you know, I would encourage people to think about the financial commitment that they're making. And I'm not discouraging people from having their kids play sports, certainly. It's just, I think, similar to the back to school supply shopping, you know, I think what I would encourage people to do is when you go to sign up for these activities, you know, maybe ask some questions about what, before you sign up for ice hockey, you know, what equipment is my child going to need?
And I think, I think it's important to understand what are the needs versus what are the wants.
I think so too.
You know, yeah. I mean, cause look, we just started baseball for one of my kids last spring, and you can go crazy with all this stuff, you know, like they need a helmet, they need a bat, right. they need a glove, but right. the other stuff, you know, I mean, they don't necessarily at a certain age, they don't need a special kind of baseball pants. The cleats you can be a little flexible with the cleats.
Right.
You know, I bought batting gloves because I thought we needed batting gloves. Well, he never used them because at that age, you know, you have to yell at them and say, hey, it's your turn to hit, get ready. And they don't have time to put on their batting gloves.
That's right. That's right.
You know, it's, I think depending on what age and how, what stage they are in terms of trying that sport, or whatever activity, if they're doing it for the first time, really talk to people and understand what are the essentials
that I have to have.
Instead of just going, cause you know, you can go into a sporting goods store or anywhere else or a music store and you can feel like you need 20 different things when really you only mm-hmm. need a few essentials.
That's right. And I would also encourage people when possible, you know, especially if they're trying it out, you don't know if they even like it, borrow equipment. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, ask the coach because I mean, I have all kinds of equipment. You know, I've got bats they can try out. You've got smaller gear sometimes that kids have outgrown and they've given to the coach or the league because they can't use it anymore. You know, that just avoids a big expense. I mean, I know baseball, I'm sure, is the same way. You could spend $300-$400 on a softball bat, or you can go to Play It Again Sports and find one for $5, you know, that your child could try. So there's just such a range. I think you're right in figuring out what's, you know, what are the critical pieces of equipment. And you, of course, you want them to be safe, but I mean, you don't have to go out and buy everything shiny new. And I would encourage people to also maybe just put some limits on how many activities you're going to do with your child, especially mm-hmm. at one time. Right. I mean, I think, you know, if you get into you're doing dance and a sport, you know, and music all at once, I mean, you can see how those activities, one, really add up the expense. And I'm sure there's also some time constraints there that we could talk about too. But I don't think there's anything wrong with saying to your child, we have a limited amount of money that we can spend on your activities. And I think that helps them understand that you know, there are financial constraints that as they get older and have to learn to budget for themselves, that sometimes you have to make choices. Does that make sense?
Yep, absolutely. And I think the thing that we try to keep in mind is, limit how much you're doing at once. That doesn't mean you don't expose them to a lot of different things. Just everything has its own season, and make sure that you're kind of following that. But I think for us, understand what are the essentials that you need for them to try it and see how they like it. And then if they take to it, then you can maybe invest in
you know,
some better equipment that'll help them to be better at it.
That's right.
If they're just starting something for the first time, you don't need to buy top of the line stuff right away as they're just starting to learn it. So I think that's the thing that we've tried to reconcile as we've kind of learned going through some of this stuff for the first time.
They're
great tips, because it can really add up. And
it can.
I'd also, Jennifer, love to bookmark this and do a separate conversation, maybe in our next one, about how in the world do you afford travel sports?
Yeah, some of them are so expensive. I mean, there was, I think it was on 60 Minutes years ago, I watched a 60 Minutes episode, and you can certainly read about what different teams cost, but, you know, people are paying 10 plus thousand a year, you know, for their kids to play a particular travel sport. Where a lot of them are traveling across the country sometimes, high level teams. And I think we could have a whole conversation around that, because I think too, having discussions, planning discussions with parents sometimes, or hearing those 60 minute interviews with the parents, and in particular, and I don't mean to pick on like travel baseball and softball. We play travel softball too. So I'm not necessarily against it, but you know, I think sometimes people see that as an investment in their child's college education. And I would, again, this could be a whole other separate, I think, interesting conversation. But to me, if you're paying 10 or 15,000 a year for them to play travel sports, you're almost prepaying for their college education.
But you're also hoping that it pays off. You're hoping that it pays off.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you and I know you're in the business of sports, and I played youth sports, and I really love the life lessons that offers people and encourage, you know, kids to do that. But I mean, we know how rare it is for somebody to get a college scholarship, a real meaningful college scholarship to play sports. It's extremely rare, and to invest that kind of money in hopes of that, I just think odds are really low, and you know, it's also putting a lot of, this is out of my realm necessarily of expertise, but you put a lot of pressure on that child, you know, to perform that I would not want on my kids. But that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
So here's a tease for the next episode. Let's think about how we want to have the conversation of, let's say that somebody is involved in travel ball, and look, you know, they have a child who really loves the sport and they want to play it all the time. And they've committed themselves to travel ball. I would love to have the conversation with you about, how do we budget for this? How do we plan for this? Because it's thousands of dollars every year to do all this travel and all the equipment and everything that comes with it. And I just want to have the conversation with you about, how do we pay for it? How do we afford it? How do we afford it without wrecking our bank accounts?
I think that would be an interesting one.
I think it could be a really interesting conversation. So I'd love to bookmark this and maybe continue it on our next episode. So, this is good. Hopefully we gave folks some tips or things that they should think about in terms of, hey, just know what you could be getting into. If you want to go and buy all this new stuff as you get ready for the school year, here's some ways that you can maybe, soften that blow a little bit.
Yeah.
But, again, as we always like to do at the end of each episode, if people want to talk to you about their own personal situation, how can they reach you?
Yeah, email's great. You can email me at jjohnson@bluerockwm.com. We're also located in downtown Winston. Welcome to call my office. It's 336-723-1220. And you can find a lot of information on our website as well, which is bluerockwealthmanagement.com.
Okay. They're a downtown Winston-Salem company, local company, and that's why we love having them here. We love talking to Jennifer about all things money. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you. It was fun.
Advisory services offered through Blue Rock Wealth Management. Securities offered through Cetera Advisor Networks, LLC. Branch 524 North Trade Street, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, 27101. Member FINRA, SIPC. Blue Rock Wealth Management and Cetera Advisor Networks, LLC, are not affiliated. Hey, thanks for listening to this episode on the Triad Podcast Network. Our mission is simple: provide information, advice, and stories about the people and places that make the North Carolina Triad such a great place to be. You can find us by searching Triad Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much wherever you like to listen. If you like what you heard and want to support the show and those that contribute, we would truly appreciate a rating and review on your favorite podcast app. It helps spread the word along, as do your shares on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Triad Podcast. To get in touch with us, simply email info@triadpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.
This is the Triad Podcast Network.